You're listening to Valley Edition. 42 states in the U.S. have affirmative action laws in place, but California voters recently rejected the idea for a second time with the defeat of Proposition 16. To find out what this means for public colleges and universities, I spoke with Danya Matos, Associate Chancellor and Chief Diversity Officer at UC Merced, Andrea Venezia, Professor of Public Policy and Administration and Executive Director of the Education Insights Center at Sacramento State, and Alicia Smith Arriaga, Executive Director of the Education Trust West. Alicia, I'd like to start with you. Proposition 209 banned affirmative action in California more than two decades ago. So we have a sense of what higher education looks like with affirmative action and without it. So can you give us a sense of what impact that ban had, particularly on public higher education institutions in the state of California?
Sure. So this fall, the Education Trust West and a team of researchers from San Diego State University, from USC and UCLA released a report called The Opportunity for Race-Conscious Policy in a More Equitable California. And the researchers found that Prop 209 and the ban on affirmative action adversely impacted California's community colleges. And that ban hampered colleges' efforts to address inequities based on race, to being able to retain students, bolster degree completion, and it really limited the use of race-conscious practices as well. And, you know, there are a lot of impacts that are also on educators and leaders to really honestly discuss race, because there's a lot of rhetoric around Prop 209 and a lot of ambiguity, and people are unclear about the ways that they can use race even in the absence of affirmative action as well.
Andrea, I'd love for you to jump in here, and maybe you could talk a little bit about the data, which is somewhat confusing. And I think when we're talking about Proposition 16, both sides of the, you know, people for Prop 16 and people against Prop 16 were using enrollment data to justify their cause. Can you just talk a little bit about enrollment?
Yeah. So, and I want to give a hat tip to EdTrust West for doing a lot of this work and others. So I'm going to be talking about some data that came from EdTrust West, has been an EdSource and other places. But it's really clear that we are not keeping pace with the racial diversity of high school graduates when it comes to enrollment in our public institutions, and that Prop 209 has created a gap in opportunities for historically minoritized students of color. So when we look at, say, Black student enrollment in the CSU and the UC, it remains lower than the share of high school student graduates in California, and the gap is greater at the CSU, where Black students were 8% of the freshman class in 1997, but have fallen in half to about 4%. And at the same time, the number of Black high school graduates has increased from about 21,000 in 1997 to about 25,000 in 2018. So we know the number of Native Americans entering CSU campuses was really small in 1996, and yet it still fell drastically to 0.2% of the 2018 incoming first-year class, which was about 114 students. In terms of Latinx enrollments in 2018 at the CSU, those closely resemble their share of the high school graduating class, but at the UC, Latinx students are vastly underrepresented, and the widest enrollment gap exists among Latinx at the University of California, where there's a double-digit difference between the percentage of high school graduates and those enrolled in the 2019 first-year class, 52% in high school graduates versus 29% of the entering class of 2019. So these differences between the percentage of students in the high school class compared to the percentage of students in the entering classes is a critical comparison when understanding impact.
So Danya Matos, you're the Chief Diversity Officer at UC Merced, which is known to be one of the most diverse campuses in the UC system. And that's become a real selling point for the university. Just tell us a little bit more about the student population at UC Merced and why diversity is so important from a student perspective.
Yes, absolutely. I also kind of want to couch a little bit in the data analysis cited by my fellow panelists. You know, I think that when you look at UC Merced and what we pride ourselves on is really thinking about the model of equity, justice, and inclusive excellence, right? So really looking at the asset model of what our students bring to the table, right? When you talk about the actual data, right, it's 71% Latinx, an equally high percentage of first-generation students. So really speaking to not only taking in the students, but taking in their families, right? And that's something really special in how we approach our work of student success and retention, and really evaluating that. I think it's different to talk about only entering students of color, and we've often used the label diversity to blanket that. But we are very specific and intentional on the outcomes we want to see, and recognizing that each person's contribution in that scope really contributes to that inclusive excellence, right? We were talking about the research, and the UC equally has done some really great literature review on this, but thinking about how the ban on Prop 209 not only impacted STEM persistence, but also the labor market, right? So we were really intentional about recognizing that this ban also had impacts on those earning over $100,000 for African Americans and the Hispanic Latinx Californians, right? So recognizing that there is this valuation also placed on the business case for diversity, and really wanting our students to persist and rise in that inclusive excellence model.
So I'm glad you brought up the workforce, because I think that's an important part of this conversation. Andrea, I'm going to come back to you, Executive Director of Education Insight Center at Sac State. I know you've been doing a lot of thinking about affirmative action as it pertains to hiring practices, particularly in public higher ed. What are your thoughts around how affirmative action has affected that piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, our faculty ranks, and particularly tenured faculty ranks, are very white. And we really must diversify faculty and staff and really work on our hiring practices and our retention practices, and really get to the heart of our campus climate and the love and care we show for our students, and students seeing themselves in us and in what we teach and in how we teach. And that's a critical part, I think, of being able to attract and retain students of color who've been historically minoritized in our systems. And staff are often the frontline workers, and we rarely have opportunities to talk about the role that staff play in recruiting students and in helping students feel loved by our institutions and stay in our institutions. So that's a very critical piece.
Alicia Smith-Ariaga, Executive Director of the Education Trust West, I'm sure you have thoughts about this piece of it as well.
Yes. You know, there's so much work to be done just in terms of diversifying not only faculty at higher ed institutions, but also diversity among the student population as well. We've actually been on the higher ed side looking at programs that are preparing K-12 teachers, which are a critical pipeline to, you know, then ensuring that faculty is also diverse. And in that research, we found that while over 75% of California students are students of color, only 35% of teachers are teachers of color. And so we know from research that students of color do better academically, socially, and emotionally when they have a teacher who looks like them, and that those results, you know, are similar in higher ed. And so we're, you know, we're really recommending that colleges build partnerships with middle schools and high schools across communities, so that we can, even in the absence of affirmative action, really work to continue to diversify our educator workforce in both K-12 and in higher ed.
And maybe you could continue and say a bit more about some of the recommendations that you have from a policy perspective on how to address this issue without affirmative action.
Sure. So one of the things that has been, you know, a big source of conversation in the state for the last year is, for instance, Cal State is working right now to, they're examining a policy that would make adding an additional year of math or additional year of quantitative reasoning a requirement for entrance. And, you know, right now that's set to be implemented in 2025 if they're able to find that it won't have disproportionate impact on low-income students and students of color. But you know, from our perspective, when we heard about this and conducted a study, actually had the Research Triangle Institute conduct a study, they found that anywhere from 15 to 20% of Black and Latinx students, if this requirement is currently put into place, would no longer be admitted into CSU. And so, you know, we would argue, especially given COVID-19 and all the work we have to do in K-12, that we need to really be making sure that policymakers and educators are focusing on building and expanding pathways into college and not restricting them. And so that's one policy that we'll definitely be watching closely over the next few years. In addition to making sure that the teacher prep programs are also working to prepare more math teachers, more teachers of color, so that students have access to high quality instruction in math and other subjects where we have huge teacher shortages in the state as well.
So again, this is Andrea. I agree with what my colleague, Dr. Smith-Ariaga, just said. And I think another policy area to focus on potentially when we're coming out of these three pandemics is cluster hiring and hiring, which is hiring multiple scholars into one or more departments based on shared research interests. And that appears to be a great strategy to advance faculty diversity and enhance university and college missions and also improve teaching and community engagement. So that appears to be a promising strategy to diversify faculty in significant numbers and also provide supports for faculty coming in to improve faculty retention.
So, Dania Matos, we're obviously in the middle of a pandemic. UC Merced, like other colleges, has had to shift to a lot of distance education. Can you speak to the extent that the digital divide may disproportionately impact students of color and play a role in this diversity conversation around higher education?
Absolutely. I think that, we really need to recognize that in order to work effectively to dismantle the digital divide, we also need to recognize it as one of the symptoms of larger forms of oppression, power, and privilege. So in particular, the racial digital divide is obviously a symptom of systemic racism, right? So any attempts to solve it just by adding computers or internet access to classrooms or public spaces really needs to go to the dismantling of it and really include different dimensions of it. Gaps in physical access, gaps in pedagogical access, but also gaps in cultural access. So for us, it's really recognizing that, one of our professor Trousey has done excellent work on this, talking about segregation by design. So the reason that we're seeing it in particularly exacerbated or uncovered by COVID-19 is because it began far sooner than that, right? Classrooms where there's 50% more students of color, they're less likely to have had internet access. They're also less likely to have adaptive software or software for students with disabilities. Students as well, where there's higher students of color enrollment, they're less likely to have participated in the creation of the website and access to things like that. So as we're thinking about it, we're also thinking about not just providing Wi-Fi hotspots or things like that, but really addressing the K-12 aspects that our students came from and recognizing it in the larger framework of systemic racism, that it's not just about computers and internet, but it's about addressing the system as a whole and the inequalities.
So I'm going to go ahead and direct the next question to Alicia Smith-Ariaga, Executive Director of the Education Trust West. Looking forward, what needs to happen to expand access to public universities and then also retention, right? It's not just getting students in the door, it's keeping them there and ensuring that they're successful. So I know that you have been very explicit about some recommendations, and I'd like for you to elaborate more about what you'd like to see happen.
Sure. So, there are a couple of ways that we can really expand access to higher education. And we have some crucial decisions actually to make as a state that will have huge impacts on higher ed this year in terms of the budget. So we know, that we're in a tight economic place, but it's going to be more important than ever this year to invest not only in higher ed, but in K-12 education to ensure that we don't have any gaps that arise due to COVID. And so really making sure financially that we provide resources to both K-12 and higher ed is going to be extremely important. Second, we're really going to have to get really sharp about how we're focusing on areas that were problems before COVID. So, for instance, in California, before COVID, about 80% of Black and Latinx students were not meeting math standards. And now that's not due to any you know, the fact that the students are perfectly capable of doing math. However, we face a huge shortage in the state of math teachers, and we have a lot of work to do in terms of actually making sure that we're using curriculum across the state that reflects a lot of the rigor that is needed to be able to access college. And so making sure that we have equitable access across the state to AP courses, to rigorous math classes, that we're accelerating students even in the midst of COVID in math, is going to be critical to ensuring that they have access to future college opportunities as well. And then finally, really working right now to diversify our educator pipeline in K-12 and to diversify faculty in higher ed is going to be key in ensuring that we're able to retain students when they get to higher ed institutions. Making sure that campuses are actually reflective of the diversity of California is going to be key. And, you know, we have a lot of progressive rhetoric in California about how we believe in getting rid of systemic racism and really rooting out racism, but we have to make sure that our action starts to match what our rhetoric is.
One of the things that I think is so interesting and so baffling when it comes to education reform is that it doesn't happen in silos. It has to happen across systems. And Andrea, I'd love for you to sort of have the last word here. You know, as Executive Director of Education Insights Center, you are looking at education reform in a really inclusive way. And can you just speak to the complexity of the work when it involves, you know, from the moment students first enter into the education system all the way to the point at which they enter into the workforce, and how you get all of these different entities along the way to work collaboratively to address these problems of diversity and inequality in education?
It's an excellent question. And I think, and my colleagues have spoken to this so eloquently leading that. So I think what I would add is that I really hope that the state can create an entity that can hold that space. Right now, we organize our education systems in ways that make sense to the people who sit within them often and not for our students. And we lose our students every time we have a gap between systems, every time we don't hold them with love and care across our systems, we lose them. And we are replicating oppression and racism throughout K-12 and higher education. We have to interrogate those structures within and across systems. And there are similarities that we know around how we assess and how we track in different classes, class levels, and the access we create with our curriculum, and what happens within the classroom in terms of the pedagogies and the curriculum that are used, and the disproportionate impact we create. So looking at those similar issues that affect our students across our systems repeatedly, and it's beyond time that the state have goals and data and authority to be able to track our successes and where we're falling short in all of these areas. And that's what I hope we can see after COVID to ensure that we never go back to where we were.
And just to be clear, there is no way from a data perspective to track a student all the way through their educational process. Is that correct?
Not yet. There is a lot of work happening right now to create a statewide longitudinal data system. And hopefully that will happen. And you know, we see that we've been in crisis for so long in this state that it could have helped with COVID, but it can help with all these crises that we are still dealing with as we move forward out of COVID.
Well, big thank you to all of you for the work that you're doing to address equity issues in education and for just informing us about the work today. So Alicia Smith-Arriaga, Executive Director of the Education Trust West, Andrea Venezia, Executive Director of Education Insight Center at Sac State, and Danya Matos, Associate Chancellor and Chief Diversity Officer at UC Merced. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.